the fuck is wrong with you?
When I die, fuck it, I wanna go to hell. Cause I'm a piece of shit, it ain't hard to fucking tell. It don't make sense going to heaven with the goody goodies dressed in white. I like black Tims and black hoodies. God'll probably have me on some real strict shit. No sleeping all day, no getting my dick licked. Hanging with the goody goodies, lounging in paradise. Fuck that shit. I wanna tote guns and shoot dice. All my life I've been considered as the worst. Lying to my mother, even stealing out a purse. Crime after crime, from drugs to extortion. I know my mother wish she got a fucking abortion.
Hello and welcome to Jumping Nothing, a podcast that leaps off the top rope and falls and falls and falls and falls into the abyss of wrestling fandom. My name is Carl and I'm here with Michael.
Hi Carl, that was good, I like that.
Michael, an Angel Fire website that lists sleaze that was mentioned on a wrestling forum once said, 143, Norman Smiley once knocked out Rick Steiner with one punch in a bar fight. 144, New Jack once got liquored up at a strip club after an indie show and talked shit to Swede Hansen in the parking lot. 145, Sonny and Candido had a three-way with Jake Roberts for some of his crack. 146, a married Kurt Angle was banging Jacqueline on the road for some time. 147, Jeep Swenson used to pimp out his wife to the boys backstage. And 148, the Freebirds had a habit of initiating new wrestlers by pissing on them while they showered.
Oh my god, is that... Sorry, Carl, wow. Now, this may sound like I'm getting excited at a reference to Michael Hayes pissing on somebody, because that would be a weird thing to get excited about. But I just watched a shoot interview, Carl, with Rowdy Roddy Piper. I mean, the theme of this episode is sort of desperation and despair. And that sleaze list you're quoting from, I never thought any of it was real. Like, I thought it was, you know, mostly bullshit. Roddy Piper, in that shoot interview I just watched, and I did know you're going to say that, confirms exactly that. He tells a story about the Freebirds coming into the WWE and Michael Hayes asking Roddy Piper if he liked to be pissed on, and then sort of pissing at him aggressively. I can't believe that, Carl. Wow. And that was your last grab from the sleaze list as well. The stars are in alignment for this episode. Yeah. Terrible, terrible episode.
That was picked completely at random. I just picked like five short ones there. And via astrology and the either retrograde or whatever the opposite retrograde status of Mercury is, that came out and is apparently true.
So, what an awful piece of serendipity.
The worst sort. So we're going to talk about how wrestling fandom is a woe-filled morass of desperation.
That's him quoting directly from the email I sent, by the way. That is a... go ahead, Carl.
What is it about wrestling fandom that makes you think it's a woe-filled morass of desperation, Michael?
You know, there's a lot of things, but I've been trying to think about how do we sum this up? Like, how do we sum up the theme of this episode and why everything seems crap? And back, even at its worst moments historically, like in the early 90s and when wrestling has been bad, there has always been a seedy undercurrent of intrigue about it. There has, you know, whether it's Michael Hayes going around pissing on people or whatever, there was always an element of something compelling about the world of wrestling and the world that wrestlers lived in. But in the current climate, it's not only is wrestling bad, as bad as it sort of was early 90s-ish, it's bland. There are all these industries set up around the sort of selling the intrigue of wrestling, and none remains. And all we have left are like that shoot interview I watched with Rowdy Roddy Piper, who clearly has some sort of post-traumatic issues, talking about being sexually assaulted by Lord Alfred Hayes. Like, that's mental. Lord Alfred Hayes. Nothing to do with Michael Hayes.
Michael Hayes.
Yes. I didn't realize that. But these people, like, marketing the trauma that, that professionals experience in a kind of once weird industry. There's nothing left but the sort of people gawking at the support group. And it's terrible. I'm concerned though, Carl, because we're, you know, since our last episode, you've entered the sort of upper echelons, the sort of, you know, the inner circle of professional wrestling analysis and journalism. So this could be a difficult. See, I have no problem alienating our several dozen listeners some more, but for you it might be this might be a bit of an issue.
I'm here to facilitate, okay? you can lead me by the hand through the terrifying world of professional wrestling. Would you say that part of the problem is that, despite what a German guy said to me at the weekend in the most sincere German way possible, he said wrestling, how do you like that? It's fake. Would you say the problem is wrestling, how do you like that? It's no longer fake.
Yeah. Well, it's not that it's no longer fake necessarily. It's, yeah. Or you know, it's not fake enough anymore. Yeah, that's it exactly. It's and like the parts of the parts of wrestling, because we all got very enthusiastic about New Japan, Ring of Honor, and all that, where stuff is incredibly fake and sleazy still. That might be a way to sum up, because we've been struggling to find a way to describe Shinsuke Nakamura to a third party, a fake and sleazy man. So that stuff is still great, but wrestling fandom specifically, because that's what we want to get into, is kind of orbits around WWE. And WWE, for all its, you know, sleazy skeletons in the closet, is a bad wrestling product with no intrigue behind it. And yet all these people, all these weird fan industries hang around it. And like even in comics or something, where the industry declined greatly since the 90s, there's still enough good stuff and pointedly bad stuff and intrigue and people making money and gossip, and there's enough to support the hangers-on that make money from sort of being on the outskirts of the comics industry. There's nothing here. It's a wasteland. Nobody's getting pissed on anymore, and yet people are still trying to sell people, put news behind paywalls of, like, it's just it makes me not want to do this podcast. It's that depressing. I just want to go for a walk.
Well, listeners, you can go for a walk while you listen to this podcast. But we've got a couple of pegs to peg this wrestling fandom desperation topic on. The first is dirt sheet culture. So dirt sheets traditionally are home-produced magazines where wrestlers leak rumors to a guy and he puts them in, and then other wrestlers and some smart fans buy the thing, read what's in it, so they can learn about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling. Which was important back in the day, because it would tell you that Memphis doesn't pay very much, or, you know, I don't know if it actually went as far as to tell you that Michael Hayes would like to piss on you, but there was important information there for wrestlers and opening up the business, etc. Nowadays, as you've pointed out in your introductory email, it's essentially just Lance Storm's tweets. Lance Storm's tweets are bad enough as a sort of first order piece of content. As you know, I'm not a fan of Lance Storm's tweets. But yeah, there are websites that are doing daily roundups, and they just will throw in, you know, CM, or a good example was that time CM Punk favorited a picture of some children dressed up as CM Punk.
They're trying to get people to pay for it is the awful thing. There are websites out there that still put, like, for $4.99 a month, we'll tell you when Lance Storm says he didn't like SmackDown this week. It's such a weird thing to try and do, like, fundamentally. But it goes back to a time, again, it's this weird sort of anti-nostalgia, or not anti-dark nostalgia, that's what I want to say, for a time in wrestling when people were getting molested backstage and people were willing to pay to hear about it. And I remember in the sort of late 90s being a kid and wait on a message board for somebody to transcribe the Wrestling Observer newsletter so I could hear about what indie shows the Nasty Boys were going to appear on that weekend, I guess, or actual intrigue like Steve Austin showing up on amphetamines. Like, you know, it's such a weird thing. But nobody shows up to shows on amphetamines anymore. Yet they're still selling you. There are people that are still buying access to these news sites are doing so on the off chance that hopefully maybe some horrible thing will happen to a wrestler and I'll be the first to hear about it, like in 1996.
Who's buying this? Does that happen? I know that maybe the Meltzer still has subscribers, like legacy subscribers, but none of the sort of backstreet versions of Meltzer are surely actually making any money off their paywalls unless to each other.
Well, you know, one wonders, because you're kind of in a... They're still there. Like, there's still quite a few of them. So they must be at least making pennies. And the law of big numbers suggests that maybe they can find people that are interested in hearing this crap or that don't know any better. But it's sad. You know, Kyle, this is the podcast about sadness. It's not offensive. It's not, you know, it's not a huge deal. It's just upsetting. I want to give this paywall dirt sheet website a hug.
What's their source? They're just not.
It's often dirt sheets. It's Meltzer.
They're just not producing anything of value. But they're now wrestling journalists, I guess.
I suppose. Well, you're a wrestling journalist.
I have produced one article on professional wrestling.
Uh-huh.
It didn't go down well.
Oh, didn't it? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. But it wasn't a bullet-pointed form of Lance Storm's recent timeline.
No, actually, what kind of dirt sheet can I...
Like WrestleZone or one of them. And also, there's fucking loads of these. Nothing happens in wrestling. Oh, yeah, okay. Here's the top news story on WrestleZone right now. Seth Rollins debuts new ring gear tonight. Brackets, spoiler photo.
What?
Comma. SmackDown main event changes. Did you hear about the SmackDown main event changing? Ambrose in action and a handicap match. Comma, handicap match. That's the news, Carl. Breaking news. Handicap match.
Oh, God. TNA allowing fans to decide future of six-sided ring. Return possible at NYC TV taping. I'm sorry, WrestleZone. It's not you. It's the culture from which you...
Do they have this six-sided ring, like, hooked up to the electric chair or something? And people are gonna...
Oh, although in the discussions in the sidebar, the second from bottom there, do you see that one? You read that out?
Has Rob Van Dam's utility as a performer diminished?
Well... Well, listeners of Jumping Nothing won't need to become regular readers of WrestleZone.com to find that one out.
Yeah.
Yes, it has.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean...
It's not what they're doing is wrong, I think, is what we're trying to get across here. It's more that there isn't enough actual news. Like, you could know that Seth Rollins had debuted a new outfit by watching Seth Rollins debuting. You know, that's not really... Also, it's a new outfit, you know? He didn't, like... It's not like one of those Meltzer in the 90s tweets where somebody, you know, gave themselves a reverse mohawk because Pat Patterson said it would get them over or whatever. It's just a new...
Yeah. Somebody brought a lizard into the locker room and nobody knows why, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, this website is a pretty decent enough-looking website. Like, somebody got a web designer to put this together. Are they making money from this? Hang on a sec. Let me take Adblock off.
So they've got a Ford ad at the top banner, a Harpic ad on the right, wrestling DVD news ad. They have a news post called Puke Equals Symbolism, which I'm going to click on as I scroll down, by Mark Madden.
I forgot Mark Madden writes for these guys. That's depressing in itself.
WWE fired its head writer. Vince McMahon thus impacted last night's Raw a little bit more. As a result, we saw Vicky Guerrero get covered in puke. Didn't see that.
Oh, wow. And the name of his article is Puke Equals Symbolism.
Yes, yeah. Puke Equals Symbolism.
All right. Okay. This is pretty desperate.
They probably are making money, though. like, these are some blue chip ads they have on WrestleZone here.
Do they, well, you know more about this than me. Are those ads not automated? They're signed up to some service, and that service just says, we're going to put out so many Harpic ads to UK IPs.
Yeah, but you
across our total network.
Generally speaking, as far as I know, you can't just sign up to some kind of centralized Ford advertising thing, because then porn sites would be full of ads for Ford that pay better than ads for more porn, which is normally what's on porn sites.
Yeah.
So they must have some kind of cachet here. So fair play to them. Anyway, subsequent to Dirt Sheets, we're going to move on to, I think, maybe the peak of what you're talking about here. Similar, but worse than Dirt Sheets, are internet shoot interviews.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is... because I've mentioned... Like, after I watched that Roddy Piper shoot interview, I did go for a walk. Like, I pulled on my jacket and I went outside and I just thought to myself, like, why... why did I sit through that? Why would I... you know... it. I felt... I genuinely... like, this is... this is a very earnest thing here. I genuinely felt like I just watched something disgusting. Like, I got dragged into one of those, like, incredibly German strip clubs by some maids, and I saw something I don't want to see, and I just had to walk it off. And you felt that. You know what I mean? It wasn't just you felt traumatized. You said, well, you know, I paid into this thing. They have my money. I have supported this industry now. It's like, it was like watching Roddy Piper on numerous occasions throughout the shoot interview recall moments where he was effectively sexually assaulted backstage, then have the guys conducting the shoot interview laugh at it, and then at the very end thank them for the opportunity to talk about these things. And I kind of said to myself, like, who's going to sit down and watch this and go, well, that was money well spent. What a great time I just had watching that. That was satisfying, and I really feel edified now about the world of pro wrestling. It's they're exploiting people that pro wrestling has ruined in the brain, Carl.
Yeah, that is effectively it, I think. Because, yeah. I mean, there are really bad U-shoots, like, from the top end of the spectrum to the other end of the spectrum. But I think even in, the last two podcasts I listened to when we record this, are Stone Cold Steve Austin had the Fantastics with Tommy Rogers on, and then before that it was Bushwhacker Luke on with Colt last Thursday. These guys, like, there are very, very few people in professional wrestling who make it to the sort of plateau where either they have enough money that they don't have to be really desperate and strange, or they were enough out of the world or had enough about them when they were in the world to mentally extract themselves from it. Like, neither Luke nor Tommy Rogers have mentally extracted themselves from the world of professional wrestling at all. They speak really strangely because they're blooded in an era where you couldn't talk about kayfabe stuff, but now they're being asked to. And it's not like Stone Cold or Colt are, like, you know, fucking RF video or whatever where they're trying to get dirt out of you and it just seems really horrible. They're supposed to be sympathetic ears, but they still create this really strange... And Tommy Rogers kept panking Steve, and he kept saying, you know and I know, and things like that, and trying to, like, associate him, and he was saying, oh, you know and I know, and we're in this business, we just want to stay low and keep off the radar. But then at the end, when Steve Austin was like, do you have a Facebook page? He was like, I just want to thank you so much for the opportunity. It's like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Like, this is sad. It's depressing and sad.
Yeah.
And it's like, because people always talk about, oh, you know, you should reach out to the older guys and give back to the older guys and recognize the people who got you where you are. But if you shine a light on something that hasn't seen the light of day for a long time, the bad, like, strange things happen there. You know, it's like a spooky dungeon or whatever where
yeah,
have, like, grown extra sort of limbs and such.
It's... but the thing, Carl, is I'm trying to... what upsets me is the sense of spectatorship about it. Because there's a really weird moment in the Piper interview where he's telling a story about, and he's getting up and he's miming, and he keeps stepping out of shot, and it's really awkward. And I couldn't quite follow the story. He tells it in such a confused way. But it's like he's standing over a massage table, and he's talking to the promoter. And Lord Alfred Hayes, again, if anybody's familiar with Lord Alfred Hayes, like, this is lunacy. But apparently, like, Lord Alfred Hayes climbed under the massage table and, like, slipped his dick into Roddy Piper's hand. And he tells a story, and the end of the story is Piper going, and I look down, and there's his dick in my hand. And the guy, the host, this is a timeline, it's the KFED commentaries guy showing something, I think. He starts laughing uncontrollably. And Piper, in the weirdest sort of moment, goes, it's not funny. And then the host goes, not for you, maybe. And then Piper goes, oh, I guess you're right, and kind of joins in like that. But there's a brief moment of just incredible, like, murky darkness just between a second and a half of this man confessing something hideous that happened to him. And the audience around him is talking about, isn't it funny, back in the 80s, the stuff wrestlers got up to. And
That's so horrible. Like, Brody Piper's obviously cracked, but he just revealed himself as a young man getting sexually assaulted. And everybody was like, ha 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 ha. And then accepted the explanation that while it wasn't funny for him, for Roddy Piper to get raped, it was funny for other people for Roddy Piper to get raped.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. But isn't that the spectatorship for a lot of stuff? Even like the Iron Sheik, who has some sort of agency that tweets on his behalf because he's in so much pain, can't walk, and spends most of his day really heavily medicated. But people think that's funny. They wheel him out at conventions, and he hobbles up on stage and says, intelligent Jew. And everybody gives him a round of applause, even though the guy's on, you know, morphine, basically, because he has no cartilage left in his knees. But isn't that a feature of it? Aren't people, and I include myself, aren't we, Carl, aren't we delighted by the fact that this is an industry so full of sleaze and awfulness that the people that have survived it now dance for our amusement and show off these deep emotional scars that they have? They're monetizing this terrible life they led. And how many times has New Jack done a shoot interview where he talks about freaking Terry Runnels having herpes and
New Jack
no
staring down the camera holding his hepatitis test and like crying while he demands that Abdullah the Butcher shows his hepatitis test. That's shoot interviewing. Wrestling fan, think that, is it like you feel that you have bought part ownership of these people as people because you've supported and been interested in what they do in the context of wrestling, so then you now have an interest in, like, retired professional footballers don't stare into a camera and accuse other people of having hepatitis while proving directly to a, like, sleazy shoot interview operator cameraman that he doesn't have hepatitis. Like, it doesn't happen. So what gives us the right?
The answer is nothing gives us the right. But why do people? But there is a market there. Like, why do people want to hear about this total bullshit? Like, it's pornographic in some respects. Like, it's they're still selling this dated idea of sleaze in pro wrestling, but it's no longer sleaze. It's people with long standing traumatic issues, and that's not even to say that if it was sort of up to date revelations about things going on now, maybe that would be acceptable. It wouldn't be, but there'd be kind of a reason for it. You'd be learning some weird explanation for the shit you're seeing in front of you, the weird backstage nonsense that feeds into the on-stage pro wrestling. But there's none of that. It's just people saying, in 1996, I got hepatitis doing professional wrestling. And people go, oh, well, isn't that fascinating? Like, I don't get it. It's genuinely upsetting. But you know what, Carl? On some levels, I do get it. Because I watched that Roddy Piper interview from start to finish. And then I had to go for a walk and cry.
It is strange, because when Piper did the Steve Austin show, I thought it was, like, I don't know if enjoyment is the word, but I listened to it straight through, but it was sad was the emotion you come out of it. Like, your eyes slightly wider open, your feelings on Roddy Piper rounded out more by the fact that he seems like a really, really fucked up dude. But the solution to that other people seem to come up with was to give Roddy Piper his own podcast rather than, you know, like, I don't know, a hug or, like, serious care of some
kind. Yeah, sort of professional counseling. Like, that is the thing. Like, they're basically saying in that podcast, like, a podcast owner there, this guy's unwinding in an amusing way. We might have the next Iron Sheik on our hand. Let's make sure he does it publicly and for us. And there's a distinction as well, I think. We mentioned on the show before that when X-Pac was on Steve Austin's podcast, and he talks about going to Mexico and getting really sick and, you know, going back to drugs and all of this stuff. But the interview was cast in a kind of a, you know, I went there, it got bad, and I recovered. Now I'm here talking to my friend Steve Austin. You know, there's an arc to it. It wasn't Roddy Piper sitting in front of a camera talking about the horrible things that has happened to him and the cameraman laughing at him. Very, very different context. And the latter, the shoot interview one, is the one people seem to enjoy. It's the one, like those YouTube things the same crowd do, bringing China on and letting teenagers on YouTube ask her incredibly personal questions about the gross things that have happened to her. Why? It's sad and it's upsetting.
Yep. Anyway, as a slight addendum to that, you're concerned about people going to what are billed as, like, since Foley started to do stand-up or spoken word or whatever, several wrestlers now have decided that this is a thing they can do, like Jim Ross tours, Jim Cornette tours. These are all guys with podcasts. Piper is touring. All of these guys have podcasts, and there's no way that they have a material separate to the 1 or 2 hours of largely valueless talking about wrestling they do every week anyway. What are they doing as stand-up?
This episode was a mistake, Carl. Because we're now...
Embrace the morass.
Lovecraftian stuff. It's just... Because the thing is, right? Here's the deal. Here's what's going to happen. I'm speculating here. But as soon as Roddy Piper starts to appear in public, again, slowly coming apart at the seams psychologically, then they give him the podcast. They start appearing on all the other guys' podcasts on the same podcast network. Now he's doing, you know, air quotes, stand-up comedy. And the thing is, right, and you know what's going to happen at that show is he's going to say, well, I have to come up with some shite to talk about here. I got a laugh when I told Sean whatever kayfabe commentaries about Lord Alfred Hayes chasing me with his dick and then putting his dick in my hand and all the other Lord Alfred Hayes dick-related jokes. I'll tell them while standing on stage and I'll get a laugh again.
We need some kind of hashtag movement of, like, protect Piper. We need to get Piper in our sitting room with a mug of tea and maybe a family member and a doctor.
Get him into fucking DDP's house. Have him do some yoga.
Yeah. He probably doesn't get on with them, though. Doesn't seem to get on with too many people.
No. It's a horrifying vista, but this, in general, this idea that, like, Foley's the worst for it, because he claimed to genuinely want to get into stand-up comedy.
What he does according, is not stand-up comedy, is it?
No,
like, not,
no.
Not according to the internal logic of what a stand-up comedy set is like.
Yeah, I've seen some of his stuff on YouTube. Like, you know, people sneaking in cameras to the fucking Mick Foley comedy show. Why? Anyway, they did it. And I've watched some of it. And it's stuff like he gets up on stage, has no timing. And I love Mick Foley, by the way. I think he's the best human being amongst the wrestlers. But he gets up on stage and he goes, so there's this one time when I was working for the WWF.
Woo!
Exactly. Me and Al Snow, we Woo. Went into it. me and Al Snow went into a Denny's. And the waitress was like, hey, Mick, I know you from the TV. Here, let me get you a free stack of pancakes. And then Al Snow went, what about me? And the waitress goes, I'll be with you in a minute, sir. Yeah, that's the joke. Like, it's
the misfortune of Al Snow. The mainstay of Mick Foley's three bestsellers and rest of career.
A mainstay of jokes he told in 1999. Again, it's just trading on, hey, do you remember when wrestling? Like, that's what's going on. And for him to call it stand-up comedy is absurd. But people are going to it because that crowd that handle his tours in the UK, they now have Roddy Piper and Jim Ross doing the same tours. So there's the same group of 150 people in... name a place in the UK. In Bristol.
Bristol.
Yeah, there's the same 150 people in Bristol that went to Mick Foley's show when he was there a year ago, then went to Jim Ross's show when he was there 9 months ago, and went to Roddy Piper's show when he was there 3 months ago, and will go to Mick Foley's next show when he shows up in Bristol again in a few months' time. And what are they getting out of it? They're getting out of seeing a man stand up on stage going, do you remember when wrestling was good and you liked it? Do you remember being nine? Do you remember the 90s? Do you remember the cartoons? Do you remember the X-Men? Do you remember King of the Hill? And they're paying to go see this.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so we've been through the long tube of dark nostalgia that brought us through douchey bullshit, Roddy Piper, you know, getting raped and people laughing at him on a video, and then Roddy Piper getting manipulated into doing other stuff. But we've saved the worst till last.
Mother of God. Yes, go on.
People who apologize for the WWE.
Yeah.
This is your least favorite thing, I think, because I do this. Yeah. I do this all the time. I love
yeah.
it. It helps watch. It helps you watch wrestling, you know? It's like...
But surely that's like... Because basically, the psychological trick people tell you to do whenever we're complaining about wrestling on Twitter is they say, well, it's not going to get better, so force yourself to like it. Like in any other walk of life, you know, when is sort of, I'm going to lower my expectations? When is that an admirable statement to make?
I don't know, you know, like...
I'm going to lower my standards. Yeah.
Realize that.
That's going to get cut out. Let's move on. Yeah.
I've got a whole... There's a whole other episode in my theory of the half-educated fan who has learned some of the rhetoric of wrestling criticism but hasn't fully figured out how to apply it without huge holes and will just say anything and then say logic afterwards. The WWE positivity, such that it is, or WWE poptimism, maybe, to use a music comparison, it kind of helps counteract that. The smart fan who is, you know, real pleased with seeing a hole in something, shouting at that fan and saying, look, shut up. Like, they're not going to book Seth Rollins against another Seth Rollins in a 90-minute, the best out of seven falls match or whatever. But there is something depressing about people who are Like, it's the people who tweet during SmackDown, I think, are the people I'm talking about here.
Yeah. You know what, though? Like, the thing is, because it's two types of bad fan arguing. Because, yes, Seth Rollins isn't going to wrestle Seth Rollins in a 90-minute classic, in a 90-minute Broadway. Those people don't exist either. You know, those people that say, oh, wouldn't wrestling be better if Seth Rollins and if every Raw had was just consisted of two 90-minute matches between Seth Rollinses. They might say that as if, you know, oh, that's what would cure this. And they're wrong as much as people are saying, oh, well, you know, it's this is as good as it's ever going to get, so we might as well accept it. Those are two wrong arguments, because what one side is, I wish it was better. One side is saying, I wish it was better. The other side is saying, and neither have the appropriate language to talk about why they feel that way. I find the sort of, because it's bad. Like, SmackDown is bad. You're right. The people that are watching, Raw is largely bad. WWE is largely bad and has gotten worse over the last year and a half. There's nothing to recommend. Like, the litmus test is, if you have the confidence to go to your dad and say, hey, dad, you should watch wrestling. I will stake my reputation as a son on you watching professional wrestling and enjoying it.
Oh.
Isn't that grim? Yeah. If you can do that.
That's some real shit you just said there.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining the, like, pity and contempt and humor and so forth working in various different levels in my dad's eyes.
Yeah.
No.
No, no, no. It's... You know, there's nothing there. And the sort of apology. But the reason I wanted to bring this up, Carl, is because the apologetics for this show, it's unique to wrestling, because there I know a couple of people that I know in real life that I follow on Twitter, and they're really into, like, soaps Twitter. There's a weird community of people that watch, like, all the soaps on UK TV.
Oh, yeah.
And there'll be people there that will be like, oh, yeah, well, Hollyoaks has gone to shit this season. and will openly say it and will be happy to say it. Or say, there's not much on TV these days. You know what? I'm really into soaps for whatever I get out of soaps. Nobody's giving it to me. I'm just not into it. There's nobody that are – like, it's weird in wrestling where people say, wow, wrestling's gotten really bad. It's WWE and TNA and both suck. Where do I go? And people say, hey, shut up. WWE is great. Now sign up to my newsletter that I do. It's silly. And to me, that's the kind of crux of it, is that people are desperately, people want to be in a fan industry around wrestling, the way there's fan industries around, like, comics and video games, for example. They want to be some prick on YouTube who reviews Steam Early Access games and gets paid okay money to do it. They want to be that for wrestling. And they can't, because it's a declining viewership. It's a bad product. There's nothing. There's no intrigue anymore. It's nothing. All the things we've gone over. It's a bad drinking industry. And yet people just, like, they think, I'll go on Twitter and I'll naysay anybody who says that they weren't satisfied with WrestleMania. And thereby grow this industry through brute force.
Yes. Do you think it's partially the way the WWE presents itself is, and I mean, it is, we sometimes forget, it is a massive worldwide thing, and they can go to any town in America and get a couple of thousand people out, and probably any town around Europe as well. But the way the WWE presents itself as a sort of omnipotent universal force, do you think that tricks fans into believing that, you know, while they may be a nerd, they're a nerd within a social spectrum that is equivalent to the social spectrum of real life, and ergo they can produce wrestling fandom related content that will have an equal opportunity to connect across the spectrum rather than just with other people like them who are producing wrestling content? Are they doing this because they've bought into a lie?
Yeah, I think they might have, because WWE does present itself that way. And you're right, they are a huge sort of global thing, but they are also, like, there's a contradiction here, because they like to claim that, yeah, no, tons and tons of people watch us. Whereas when you look at their demographics, their most important demographic are really old people, like people that presumably have been watching wrestling for ages, like people over... like it's like over 40s or whatever, however they break down that demographic. And now that they've gone into that, you know, internet streaming thing, their Netflix, they are increasingly reliant on their captive nerd audience. Those are the people that are most engaged for sure. And really what they produce is very cheap television. So you're right, they're on TV in a million countries. But, They're not prime time in all of those countries. You know what I mean? They're a niche interest or a weird sort of, you know, Saturday morning thing in Belgium. And it isn't the sort of giant, global, robust, you know, fandom you'll get in anything bigger, really. You know, it's not World of Warcraft or something like that, which is a huge thing that everybody that sees it is invested in it. It's cheap TV.
So you think World of Warcraft is bigger than the WWE?
I wish I hadn't brought this up, because now I have to reveal that I have knowledge of the World of Warcraft fandom and the industry around it. World of Warcraft has a lot of news sites and shit itself, has a lot of dedicated World of Warcraft podcasts, and, you know, it has a fan industry. And all those people are dedicated to it, and they get huge numbers, and they've YouTube, and blah, blah, blah. And yes, I think it would be a much more profitable space to be in, or in League of Legends, or one of these other nerdy interests. But for wrestling, the number of actual engaged viewers, I think, is really, really small. And no matter how many people kind of insist that, you know, and the people that are engaged don't really like WWE, is the weird fundamental contradiction.
Yeah.
But you know what's worse than all of this shit is, like, when I was in the UK last, I watching TV late at night and flipping through the channels, and there's this, like, on some mad, you know, like Bravo or some just sort of off the beaten path TV station, there are these guys that got on TV to do news coverage of TNA and the weekly goings on in TNA, where less than nothing happens. But they're enthusiastic about it as well. Like, that must be close to 100% of the people that watch TNA hate TNA. These guys need to stop. They need to go back and get some sort of practical qualification in computer programming. Because, like, it's the most desperate thing of all. People that watch Roddy Piper do a shoot interview where he talks about getting molested and thinks, I want to be in this industry. Like, it's a dark, declining world. Why are you trying to salvage it?
Machiavellian is Illuminati, all through your body. The blow's like a 12-gauge shot. Feel me? And God said he should send his one begotten son to lead the wild into the ways of the man. Follow me. Eat my flesh, flesh of my flesh. Come with me. Hail Mary. Run quick, see what do we have here now?
To wrap up, Michael, I want to ask you this question.
I don't want to answer. This is, oh man, Carl, this has been a terrible journey.
It's a dark, declining world. Why do you want to salvage it?
For the people, for the fake and sleazy men like Shinsuke Nakamura. They're still of a great deal of interest to me. There are parts of pro wrestling that are absolutely fantastic. And pro wrestling itself, as an idea, is absolutely fantastic. And I really enjoyed that Chikara show I watched recently. I always enjoy watching YouTube. But there's, like, you know, What would be the reasons to kind of salvage what exists in the North American wrestling scene right now? The indies would die if WWE went. Maybe someday WWE will be better. You know what? I don't know how to answer that question. I can't recommend it now.
Why does jumping nothing exist?
That's a good question. Why does it exist, Carl?
I don't know. I think we're all right at doing this, but I don't know. Like,
well, it's a weird thing because this podcast itself, like, we are mostly in the business of recording, you know, every few weeks, recording a podcast that encourages our, you know, several dozen listeners to stop listening to us, which this episode is in spades.
Yeah.
So I don't know. This podcast is a weird mess of contradictions, I think.
Read out a couple of tweets that I did last night when I was thinking about this episode and sort of becoming depressed, or whatever it is you do in preparation for an episode of Jumping Nothing. Doing a Jumping Nothing about how depressing wrestling fandom is, which is essentially our lane now and the great barrier to our success. And then I refer to a graph showing inverse proportionality of how convincing our arguments against wrestling fans are and how much they want to listen to us, which is a problem. And then another graph showing inverse proportionality of our popularity amongst wrestling fans and how comfortable we are with being alive. So I think those are the two problems. If we got popular, we would get very uncomfortable. And we will never get popular because we are constantly arguing against wrestling. This whole episode is just a criticism of every wrestling fan. Every engaged wrestling fan who might be useful if we ever tried to sell a t-shirt. We have just undermined, like, comprehensively.
Yeah, I mean, wow. This has not only been an incredibly dark episode, but it's gotten very cerebral all of a sudden. It's like a genuine... We're ending on a note of genuine existential crisis, Carl.
It's like... I feel like the Batman music should come in here. Like, or, you know, at the end of the Batman episode where they're like, can Michael and Carl survive the sledging they just gave themselves to fight proxy?
No,
recovery.
What should happen is that weird, dull tone from Irreversible should start playing. That plays at the natural frequency of the human bowel and makes everybody feel nauseous.
Oh, the brown note.
It's not quite the brown note. The brown note is something a little bit more violent. This one just gives you a sense of unease. And we should just leave that played for 10 minutes.
Okay, yeah, I'm willing to do that.
Okay, well, if you can find it, that'd be great. But, this has been a dark and terrible episode. I don't want to do one of these for another long while.
Yeah, sorry about that, listeners.
We need to find a something positive to talk about. Because I'm looking at that, because I went to our Twitter to check out these tweets you did, and I'm looking at that, at our banner of Shinsuke and the Hello Kitty thing.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is what it's about. This will make the pain go away. God, that was a terrible time, Carl.
So, follow us on Twitter for more of this. subscribe, rate, review, etc. on iTunes. JumpingNothing.com is where you can get the thing on the internet if you want to, like, do that or whatever. I think that's it from us.